Blog Talk Radio.
Justify that much based upon the subject of today's show, but that's why I'm not complaining. I'm just saying it's wet. However, today we'll be talking about Harvey, its ramifications for not only Houston, but also the nation. I don't know if you've checked or not, but gas prices have gone up since Harvey hit and the calling went out early in the week, like, yo, if you don't have any gas, make sure you fill up by Wednesday because prices are about to jump. And they did. They damn sure, they didn't fucking jump. They leaked. And for a joker that, and this is not being braggadocious, this is just being honest. For a joker that has to utilize premium gasoline, that's not a good look. Not a good look at all. And on the horizon are some events, some things happening on the left coast. And whenever I think about California, I think about the first Die Hard movie. If you remember in the first Die Hard movie, there was a scene in which a gasoline station was in the background. And gas was like 78 cents. 78 cents. When was the last time you saw gas prices at or below a dollar? But gas was 78 cents in California. 78 cents in California. Gas like $10 a gallon out that motherfucker now. This wasn't 50 years ago. This was in the 80s. This is 2017. This is 30 years ago, maybe a little more than 30 years ago. And gas prices have gone from less than a dollar to damn near $10, because I guarantee you, if it's three something here on the East Coast, it damn sure gonna be $5.50 at least, or damn near close to it out in LA. I guarantee you. So my mindset is already like, I need a hybrid, because I ain't fucking around. Like, I need to be able to live when I get back from the West Coast. Good morning, Sister Rashi. What's going on with you?
Oh, good morning, brother. Good morning. It's so good to hear your voice. I have been looking. I've been looking to see what the economic fallout would be from Harvey, and it's certainly bringing out the ugly side of those of the merchants, of the, I'm saying it's really testing the moral code of those people. I saw a case of water for $42 on the internet in Houston.
And I looked
to see if it was Photoshop. It didn't make sense to me. They had another case at another store that was $20-something. This is, I'm talking about 24 bottles of water.
And I was trying to fathom
what kind of the reasoning, what's the logic train? These people don't have nothing. They are desperate. Let me price it so ridiculously beyond what they can do that you force them to steal it, or only the richest can have water. I was really doing my best to tap that out in my thoughts. Like, what happens when in the midst of a crisis, you go out for profit? Because there is money to be made. I mean, if you can make money when in times of peace, you're supposed to double. You know, you're supposed to really make it in times of war.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, like, I'm wondering if the strategy is working. I mean, does it really work to mark things up 500% more than what it was, simply because the people who are buying it are super desperate? And if it does work, we need to address who else is using that tactic on us, you know? Who else
right.
is recognizing this whole country as being under a struggling state? And, you know, something as simple as them little round bubble gums we used to get for 5 cents out the machine, now they 50 cents now. Things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you peeped that out
even
too?
That, like, they got us all the way down to the bubble gum machine is already marked up 200%. So I'm looking at what's happening in Houston, and I want to see how it's going to ricochet throughout the rest of the country, because if they can mark it up out there, what's stopping the people from the West Coast from marking it up there and then eventually
mm-hmm.
even in Montana, you know?
Okay, well, we're going to have some guests on directly from Houston today to talk about that, and one of them is unique in a lot of ways. He is beyond being a friend of mine. He is also a former police officer. He is Afro-Latino. He is a teacher now. He's a veteran. There's a lot of boxes that we got covered with Camilo. You know, he's the brother that was sending the photographs, and I was posting to Facebook and whatnot. So he was going out taking pictures. He was like, "Done, check this out." So I was taking them. I'm putting them on Facebook so they can get the blast and get the attention that was going on. He was safe. His family was safe. We've been in cahoots about some other things too, but we'll trip out about that when he gets on. But and then we're going to have Mr. Day. Mr. Day used to work for me, believe it or not. And he's going to come on because Mr. Day delivers to Mr. Day delivers to downtown Houston, and that is his area of responsibility for the company I used to work for. And I wanted him to come on because he has a different perspective, because he's literally in the center of the city every day. Like, Camilo lives on the outskirts and he's not always in the city, you know, city. Mr. Day is in the city every day, so Mr. Day should be joining us pretty soon. We got Camilo on already, and I'm going to let him come in early because it's a whole lot of shit that's going on, and I don't want to repeat the stuff now that we're going to do later, and I'll do my best to not do that, but there's a whole lot of shit going on, and this ain't the time to be limiting our time to how we normally run things. So good morning, Camilo. What's up, man?
Morning. What's going on, fellas? How's everybody going? How's everybody doing?
I'm great.
Hold on.
It's just me and Sister Rashi right now. Mr. Day should be on later. But say hello to Sister Rashi.
Hey, Sister Rashi. Good morning.
So you in the land of the lost right now.
We're just grateful to be alive right now, I'll be honest with you. This has probably been the worst natural disaster I think I can imagine. It's beyond human conception. We can't even think how things are bad right now in Houston, but I'm grateful to God right now to just be able to speak to you guys. But there's a lot of things that are occurring right now in Houston that a lot of people are not aware of. I mean, from the looting, and there's a lot of the softening and the filtering of a lot of the media coverage to allow this idea of the heroism just to be able to exude or to be shown on television, while we have folks that are reporting thefts in the shelters. There's a lot of this heroic, well, let's go have these guys rescue people from boats, but there's still a lot of African American people that are stranded, that are hungry, but they want to create the gloss. Because what I think Houston's trying to avoid is to appear like another Katrina, because unfortunately we want to associate New Orleans with poverty and this idea of this is a majority African-American city, and we don't want the same image being repeated in Houston. So here we bring in this heroism, these white folks coming in and on their boats and plucking people out the water, but a lot of our communities, there's a lot of people that are still displaced. There's no food. A poor kid, a young African-American kid died yesterday, as a matter of fact, from being up on the second floor breathing in mold, and the EMS couldn't respond through the water fast enough, and the kid died of respiratory failure. And a lot of this is not occurring in the news. The fact that the death count is up to 50. But what you're seeing on CNN and Anderson Cooper is an entirely different situation. You know, it's an unfortunate situation.
Let's dig into that a little bit. And I want to dig into that a little bit with your cop side first, because I was just saying, first I was running down your resume, and I was like, well, dude was he's a veteran. He used to be a cop. He's a teacher.
Yeah.
He's Afro-Latino. I mean,
you
got every box covered. You got every box checked, right?
Not at all. We're all black people. We're all from the African diaspora. It doesn't matter. We're all black. That's all right.
Let's start with your Leo side, your law enforcement side. So, like you said, there are looters going on, right?
There's a lot of looters.
What the hell
are
they going to do with these people? What are they going to do with these people? What jury is going to sit back and be like, you're guilty? Like, seriously, are they
even
going to
prosecute these people? It's a shame. I don't know. They've had 97 guns stolen from 3 different gun shops so far. And a lot of the looting, unfortunately, is occurring in our community, in the African-American community. And unfortunately, what that leads to our property value, our insurance rates, property value, it just makes everything, the conditions worse.
It's just a
sad situation. But a lot of the gloss, what they're trying to portray, of what you're seeing what you see in the media is a CNN heroism, and so-and-so was rescued, or this man is over here playing the piano, which is sad. But there's a lot of theft. There's a lot of almost lawlessness going on in areas like Fifth Ward, Greens Point, South Park. I mean, people have not had water and food for quite some days. And a lot of our people are afraid to go to these shelters because they're being, their property's been stolen, money's been stolen from their wallets while they sleep. So, and there's a lot of that. They're just disobeying us, and the focus is more on areas like the nicer areas like San Felipe of Houston, like the Sugar Lands of Houston. Meanwhile,
Bel-Air.
The north side is Bel-Air is getting a lot of attention. They're getting a lot of, exactly. So the reader's showing this.
I want to keep you focused because, like I said, there's a whole lot of stuff going on. So let's stick with the looting part.
Mm-hmm.
So you said the guns were stolen. Stores got hit? How many food stores got
hit? A lot, several, and they've all been in quote unquote poor communities. They've I can't even imagine. I don't even know the numbers because there's been so many.
I got you.
The Fiesta grocery stores, different mom and pop shops, different pawn shops. And, in fact, I think there's even a video going around. Some young African, or I should say, older gentleman. He's got a shotgun in front of his business because he owns a pawn shop there, a little outside of Fifth Ward. And Lou's going in there grabbing TVs and whatnot, and he's trying, you know. But and of course, the cop's response is, "Well, these aren't life-threatening emergencies. You handle it."
Right.
But I'm sure it wouldn't be the same thing if you were down in Bel Air and Maryland or in other areas that are more quote-unquote affluent. You know, the response is going to be there.
Okay,
so it's a sad situation.
We've had guns stolen. We've had liquor stolen. You're going to have this, right? You're always going to have lawlessness when shit like this happens.
Because
people who are grimy and gritty, no matter where you are, what they look like, are going to be grimy and gritty. And this is the perfect cover for people to be grimy and gritty. You know, you and I were joking on the phone. I was like, yo, you know some jokers out here stealing some Newports, you know, some Hennessy, some rock. I mean, let's be real.
I haven't had a piece of bread in about a week.
The fight.
I haven't had a peanut butter sandwich in over a week.
You know, I was getting to that. Hold on. Let me finish. Let me continue. Let me get to that point. So what? Corrales and Triple G fight this weekend. Some Grey Goose was stolen. Some rock. I mean, somebody going to throw a hell of a fight party this weekend. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's just be real with this situation.
Now, we would
not want that to be, right, because in the utopian world that we hope to live in once upon a time, one day maybe, stuff isn't like that, but that shit's going to happen. Not to excuse it, because this is not to make excuses, but, you know, to be honest with the situation.
I'd like to interject I'd like to interject something very important. Every single item that has been stolen or looted has already been accounted for as far as insurance is concerned.
Insurance. Yep.
So I don't want us to start making equivalencies between the lives and, you know, everything stolen. Some things stolen are preserving people's lives, and whether it is or isn't, it has been paid for. It has been paid for. And so I'd like us, not to say that I'm down with the free-for-all. I hate something for nothing. But I want us not to put some waterlogged fruits and dented canned goods and some, you know, make that an equivalent with a human life, even a less than favorable person. So while we're discussing things taken, there's an inventory for that, and there's a whole company, you know, Mutual or whatever, or Omaha it is. Somebody's already waiting to file that claim. And so, you know, the more important thing was that in this country, we still haven't learned how to set up a situation where you can come here and get your sandwich. You don't have to kick in the door. Mm-hmm. We've already got someone at the end of the block or at the middle of the four blocks that has the oranges already. The store owner is not trying to hold in some old perished food that wasn't able to get sold because the storm came. The store owner has already opened up the door and given that food away because it's already been paid for by the insurance. This is the world. This is the utopian idea that we need to be hold on to, not counting. The only thing that you have said that really disturbed me are those guns because, and here's the deal, they've already been tagged and bagged. Those guns are not anomalous guns gotten from another. Those guns are registered. Somebody knows the pawn owner knows. So when you shoot that gun, whoever looted that gun, there's paperwork behind that.
That is true. Mm-hmm. That is true. Yeah.
So nobody's getting away with it. People are just suffering.
Yeah.
And imagine you in
the
car, you and your children are in a car trying to protect yourselves when you never purchased a gun for your family, and now the pawn shop door is open, and there's a gun that you can use to make sure your family is safe until the storm, you know, the chaos of the storm rides out. I personally would go and grab me a gun because you don't want to be the only one with a knife when everybody around you.
Especially in the poor communities. But my issue is, again, the response time. It seems like the priority is not in the black community, black and Latino community here in Houston at all, in terms of their response. Systems are in place in nicer areas already. There's areas like Hedwig Village, Bunker Hill, which are nice, affluent areas in Houston. People have been plucked out. Insurance forms have been taken care of, while you have a lot more displaced African-American, Latino people here in this city that are just sitting there stranded, hopeless. There's a sense of fear among the Hispanic people here that they're going to get deported, so they're not readily trying to get into the shelter. There's a lot of anger also, and some folks with the church, because, of course, y'all heard about the fiasco with Joel Osteen shutting the door.
Hold on. You're going too fast. We're going to walk this thing down, but we have an additional person to call in. Brother Tahaka, good morning. Okay. How are you, sir?
I'm just fine, brother. I just had a couple of questions.
Good morning.
Good morning, sister.
Mm-hmm.
My first question is, because I'm the type of person, I only deal with solutions to problems. What is the problem? What is the overall problem globally? And what is the solution to that problem? That's my question.
Before you get into that, I'm trying to narrow the scope of your question, sir. When you say, what is the overall problem and solution in respect to what?
Well, in respect to the facts as presented to us, that we have shootings and bombings and corruption and confusion. We have chaos. We have guns registered and unregistered. We have to ask the question, why does this exist and who is behind it, minus any religious implications? That's why I asked the question.
Okay. All right. Okay. Let me take this. Everybody calm down for one second. Let me take this. I definitely appreciate you taking the time out to join us and be with us. This is not the day for that, though. We are talking about a situation in which folk are starving for food, water, shelter. They have no idea where they're going to turn. There's a place and a time for everything, sir, and this is not the time for that. We need to talk about the relief efforts for those who are affected by Harvey. We need to talk about how we can potentially support whomever there is that needs support. And to throw out a blanket statement like that, nah. We will circle back to that on another day, but this ain't the answer. If you have a specific question in respect and regard to Harvey and the efforts that are going on in Houston, please, I open it up for you to do so. But for something that blanketed, we don't have the time or the scope for that today, sir.
Okay, well, I'll address that. Here's my question. Is the situation involving the hurricane hitting Texas a man-made disaster, or a man-caused disaster, is it a natural disaster, in your opinion?
I've done a little scientific work. I've done a little science work behind the global warming phenomenon, so I could possibly lend a little bit of information to that. Sir, as far as a lot of the paperwork out there, the scientific studies done, what we're dealing with is a matter of too much water in the air. what's happening is our planet was accustomed to having so much water, and our workings between the industries we have pumping chemicals in the air and just the sheer number of humans there are on Earth, what has happened is the accumulation of water has made weather phenomena that happen when water gets high, it's made it happen more frequently. So what we're going to see is we're going to have to recalibrate how often we think storms are going to come, and we're going to have to widen the time frame we think storms are supposed to happen in. Usually we say that June, July, August, September are the most active weather months because that's when the heat has allowed the water to evaporate into the air and become a part of a weather phenomena. But because the heat is so pervasive, because the heat is always there, the heat is unable to escape due to the amount of chemical deposits we put in the air, that we have trapped a layer of moisture within up under our ozone layer that is going to increase just this weather phenomena that you see, hurricanes, tornadoes, monsoons, floods, all water-related weather phenomena are going to increase because we don't release water back into the atmosphere the way we used to. That's the gist of it. Now, when I say we, I mean every single human living on Earth, including the Himba woman in her hut. All of us leave some type of footprint on this planet, and how much of it we leave depends on how, do you have a smartphone, do you have a house with power, do you have an old car, a new car, or a car at all. How you live is going to dictate the amount of chemicals you are allowed to be put in the atmosphere on your behalf. And so that is what's happening. And so until we start addressing how we live, and what corporations
talking about
weather-related phenomena, these things are going to happen and increase.
Okay, so you're saying that this is due to natural, it's not engineered.
It's an engineered pressure on the natural phenomena. It's both. You're looking for either or. What I'm telling you is something unnatural, an unnatural stressor is being put on a natural system, and it is throwing it out of whack in a way to where you're going to see more natural disasters as far as water-related weather is concerned. That's what I'm saying. Okay,
yeah,
sir. We're no closer now to knowing what to do when those events happen. So that's why discussions like the one we're having here about Hurricane Harvey are important. We need to know, since they're going to happen more frequently, we need a fail-safe plan. Like, one, A, you fly the choppers, and B, we bring the truck. I mean, I don't know what the plan is, but it needs to be something that we can repeat as many times as possible so that looting and people going hungry, and the most disturbing thing I've seen so far is a nursing home full of people sitting in wheelchairs with water up to their waist. That's
true.
Extremely disturbing. Extremely. And those were all white residents. I couldn't make a gesture unto their social status, their economic status. But these were all white people sitting in wheelchairs with waist.
Yeah, that was a poor area.
Waist high water. So.
Yeah, it was a poor area. That wasn't a more well-to-do area. Yeah.
Well,
yeah, our
let me add this little Let me add this little tidbit here. For the past 3.5 years, and by the way, we're down here in Florida. We just experienced Matthew last year. We've been doing an investigation on hurricanes, nothing but hurricanes. And what we are finding is quite disturbing. We looked at what was happening in Florida, what was happening to Louisiana, in different places. And
so what
we
was
are
your
noticing.
Most disturbing, what was your most disturbing finding, sir? What did you, what gave you the most alarm from that study that you did?
The most alarming thing to us is it appears that these particular storms are orchestrated, carried out, and executed by people that have access to the machinery and technology to do so. This is the most disturbing thing that we're looking at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of scientific. Yeah.
Who are we? When you say we, who are we?
Well, we have
our
organization. We have a private organization. We all are trained in what's called the private sector. I don't want to talk about that too much because this type of thing here, most people don't even know these kind of people exist.
Yeah, there's been a lot of scientific data to support where a lot of y'all are saying it. Of course, with President Trump not signing the Paris Accord, doesn't make things better. And of course, we're not involved in any of those discussions or on the boardroom as far as who signs what and who allows how many chlorofluorocarbons and CFCs and pollutants to go in the air. We have a dire situation here in Houston. And there's, again, I had to wait for 2 hours just to get a loaf of bread. I haven't had, like I was sharing with Lee this week, Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Okay.
No. Brother Tahaka, thank you very much. Brother Tahaka, thank you very much for your comment. If you want to continue to listen, please do so. I want to talk to you about that loaf of bread because that shit was funny. So you sent me the picture.
Humbling experience. When I look at situations like Sierra Leone and Nigeria and all, even in Bangladesh, and I see the water and the lack of food and just to not be able to have a loaf of bread has been such a humbling experience. And I think a lot of Houstonians here, to where I'm from, can relate to it. And it's you become more grateful for the things we take for granted here in America.
Right.
But that's one issue that I've known. That's one learning experience that I've been able to pull from this whole Harvey experience. But what's been frightening, and a lot of the friends that I'm talking to are sharing a lot of the same, is the lack, is the apprehension initially from the churches here in Houston. There's a lot of shelters here in Houston. There have only been high schools and middle schools and community centers. And we pay our tithes, our offerings faithfully every Sunday. I've been in Joel Osteen's church on many occasions. I've been in several of the African-American major churches here. And I'm not here to beat up on pastors. But I'm just saying we're not just hearing the word. We got to be doers of the word. And there's a man named the president of the Islamic Association here in Houston. His name is Khan, K-H-A-N. And he was here. And in fact, I have two masses right down the street from my house. They never close. And
right around the corner.
Because I walked down, I had 2 inches down the street. I mean, about 3 inches, I would say, down the street from my house. So thank God the water didn't start to get too close to where I was living. But the mosques never turned their backs to anyone. And they're spread out around the entire Houston-Harris County area. Never shut their doors. So I know people are going to give Joel Osteen the benefit of doubt, but there's a lot of people with a little bit of, they're just a little disappointed. And, disappointed is probably a lighter word.
And they should be. And they should. They pay in. They should be because they pay into that system. It's called tithing.
Yes.
But
here's
the deal. It is actually against Islamic law to close the doors when your people are suffering. It's in the book. I mean, I know it's in the Bible as well. It's in the book that you cannot. It's a lot of what you cannot do in the book. And one is. In Islamic law, if a stranger comes to your house, you have to let them in. If they don't show that they're trying to hurt, if they show that they're not trying to hurt you, and they're in need, you have to let them in. You have to let them in. Allah says that you just let him in.
Wow.
If you let in the suffering brother, you just let him in. And so they cannot. Mm-hmm. You know, you absolutely, I mean, you can, I guess, technically, but you'd be doing a whole lot of praying afterwards. So so it's in the nature of the religion. It's the nature. So what I want to ask is, what is in the nature of Christianity to where it can justify not opening those doors?
I have no idea. And it's been a shock. It's such a disappointment because Osteen takes in, he has a 35,000 member church. We have another church here, the Church Without Walls, Ivy Hilliard, Kirby John Caldwell. These are churches with at least 10,000 or more members. And there was a slow willingness to open the doors. And there, of course, their excuse was they were taking on water. Even later found out that those pictures were doctored or, quote-unquote, using tropes words, fake news. That, in fact, the following day, Osteen's church was open to receive people. And it's a slow amount. At first it was, oh, I don't have security. And then I didn't want to put my people in harm's way. You're talking to a family of five that just lost everything. The psychological devastation from just seeing your furniture, refrigerator, everything floating around in the house,
floating down the street.
All your hard work. Huh?
Say I said again? Floating down the street.
Everything has been floating down the street. You've seen people's lives, hard work, just gone. And I'm not sure if this his excuse was something that we could actually accept. I mean, of course, people are, you know, going to forgive him. I'm sure the church might be full tomorrow, but it's just a matter of, it's not just talking the talk and taking our money. And it's causing people to have a waning eye against him and a lot of the pastors here in this church. So I hear you, sister. I mean, we don't, you know, I'm glad that Islam has those tenets that at least they're able to say, you know what, because they never shut the door. I mean, I walked down the street, I looked at both mosques, both masjids, they were wide, the lights were on, people were right there, and there was about 3 inches of water as I walked up, pulling up, passing by the masjid. So I'm not here to, you know, put one against the other, but I just go on based on what I see. And in fact, if you ask Lee, I haven't shared the data to support what I'm saying.
I want to say this. First off, Camilo, Sister Rashi, we have another call. I'm going to bring him in real soon. Okay. But so we were talking about okay. Charlemagne the God, I think he said the best thing about, and I'm going to break it because he had a long dissertation about all this. But he said nuts and bolts of it was, I think Houstonians should treat Osteen's church like he has treated Houstonians. It should be their last ditch effort. It should be the last place that they go when every other place is full. And I'll leave it at that. Brother Jason, good morning. Welcome to the show, sir.
How you guys doing today?
Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I wanted to bring up another important fact that a lot of people are leaving out. One of the past things I've noticed about Houston, the past 10 years, and I did some research on this, Houston's population has exploded. And one of the reasons for that is the pricing of housing. And I had some of my friends out there, and they said the way they keep these housing prices very low is by not having no zoning laws. But the negative effect of that is the marshland. It kills the marshlands because what happens, you have so much population growing at an alarming rate, areas where the marshlands used to be, which you guys are aware, when it rains, the marshlands absorb a lot of that rain. So it wouldn't have been as bad as it is today. And it just shows you greed is behind everything. Greed destroys everything.
Absolutely.
Like nature creates everything. The environment a certain way to protect us from harmful effects of nature. And because we so focused on making money, because I'll be honest, Houston's all about, hey, let's keep growing this population so we can have a big economy and we can bring in more revenue stream. But look at the negative effect of this. See what I'm saying to you?
Yeah.
So this is what's happening in Houston right now. They have no zoning laws, and this is what caused the situation to get this bad.
I totally agree about this. I totally agree. Greed is behind all of this. I agree, because there's a lot of areas that were designated, quote unquote, as reservoir areas that they've actually built property on. I'm here in Houston, so I'm with you. That's behind greed. The population here has exploded. We're the energy corridor. I mean, the biggest medical center in the U.S., probably even in the world. So there's a lot of things going on that's bringing people here. The cost of living is very low. The housing is affordable. But, you know, we again, at the end of the day, it's greed. But who ends up suffering the most, of course, in these cases, and what I'm seeing here, that the news is somehow filtering out because they're showing you all this heroism. But a lot of the have-nots are still suffering. A lot of the have-nots.
Did you guys?
I'm not seeing water.
Did you guys hear about Target and Best Buy? Did you guys hear about Target and Best Buy inflating their prices on water, bottles of water?
Oh yeah, gouging.
And these are big companies doing this. It's also shocking.
Mm-hmm.
These big major corporations that are doing this.
Mm-hmm. It's going on everywhere. It's happening.
But it's
gas,
not,
water,
it's not shocking.
Bread, everything.
This is America.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we do.
Mm-hmm.
In the midst of travesty, we create profit.
Mm-hmm.
This is why Halliburton has a P&L sheet, and they're a very profitable business. KB&R has a profitable business.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the midst of chaos, they create profit.
Mm-hmm.
Consumerism. This is as American as Americans can get, dude. This is what we do in America. We this is capitalism.
I believe
you're
looking for the word
well.
Capitalism. That's right. Capitalism.
Yeah,
capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly
what
it is.
We know how to do it well. We know how to do it very well. But to the price gouging, Camilo, you are on the ground. What are gas prices?
Yeah,
like
I'm
today?
Here.
What are gas
prices
like
about
today?
Well, first of all, there's about 8 empty gas stations. So I'm in a drier part. Thank goodness it finally dried out where I am. But there's about 8 empty gas stations. The one that I finally found, the gas station, I was able to come across, the gas was at $3.49. And I'm sure that's not the national average. But, you know, thank goodness. Yeah, it's going up. But I don't want to get my gas tank below half a tank because I don't want to spend 2-3 hours looking for gas just for me to run out. I mean, things are situations that dire right now. So, I mean, but yeah, the gas prices have went up exponentially. They've gone up. It's incredible. The food, I mean, there's rationing. Walmart will open their doors at 4 o'clock a.m. There's a line of people out there just to buy basic things. By 4:20, the shelves are empty. 4:20 in the morning, people have been in line. So other grocery stores are allowing one customer in, one customer out. They're allowing one bread per household, one milk per household, one, you know, eggs per household, but that's only going to last so long. So, because trucks can't get in here because of everything around the drier parts is flood. It's flood water. So you're almost like in pockets here in Houston, stuck on islands. So the situation is very dire right now. And this is going to take a long, it's going to be a huge recovery effort, long recovery effort. How long it takes,
well,
I'm not even sure. But it's,
I mean, well I hate to dishearten you, but they're still recovering in New Orleans. There are still communities. There are still communities with the smell of decomp in them, and so that was 12 years ago.
Imagine that! Wow.
Let's hit on before I start hitting all the facts and all the research and all that type of stuff. Are you at the Houston Independent School district or what school district?
School, HIZ. Yeah, our schools, we are. I am. And the schools are closed. September 11th, and that's tentative because, again, there's still a lot of the plaster and the first floors of a lot of the buildings that have to be removed, the sheetrock, and all these different things that the superintendent had mentioned to us, and that it's still tentative, and a lot of our displaced students are having to find clothes. Of course, we're going to have a relaxed dress code, but they're trying to still gather clothes just to be able to get dressed to go to school. So it may be longer than September 11th, you know, because this has been it covers this wider swath in New Orleans. And I mean, to imagine people, Houston is about 2 or 3 New Orleans, if you can imagine that. So you can just, you know, we saw how devastating Katrina is. Look, things are here now. So, you know.
Now,
hold on 1 second, please. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you about possible aggression from neighboring towns. When people from, not to keep harkening back on Katrina, but when people were ready to leap from the water and they got ready to go towards the Jefferson Bridge, they were met by hostile hostile white suburbans refusing to let the indigent people. Have you all, have you heard any accounts of hostility from the safe communities fighting against
what,
less safe citizens finding higher ground?
What they are, I can tell you the difference, that they all are armed. I do know that. And the communities with a lot more money are passing by the lesser or have-not communities in this city. They're those that are still displaced or needing to get shelter, need to get food. They're looking, sitting on the rooftops, and they'll tell them, hey, I'll be right back for you. And zoom, they keep taking off. So
let me ask you guys a
question.
There's not a
lot of hands being extended to the poor communities here at all. That all the Fifth Ward, Third Ward, Greens Point, South Park, Acres Homes, all the areas, people are still stranded, afraid to go to shelters because they're getting robbed, or there's rumors of people getting robbed there. So there's a lot of fear right now, and a lot of people just being displaced, selling for living in back of stores or living in back of hotels. This is a really bad situation all over.
Let me ask you a quick question real quick.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to know if this was true, because it seems like our government's actually going to be as being honest with us now. I heard that they're actually letting certain levies out in certain districts because they didn't want the city of Houston to get flooded, which basically tells me they're just trying to clean it up, trying to make it sound nicer than what it really is. Basically, it's the wealthy neighborhoods. They don't want the wealthy areas to get
That's what it is.
Wow.
There's the Attucks Reservoir. There's the Attucks Reservoir, and I live closer to the Barker Reservoir. And what they're doing is having quote unquote control releases, because there's a big main river called the Buffalo Bayou downtown. And that's where that's the command center of Houston. That's where all the oil and the energy gas corridor is. The Shell, Exxon's, the Mobils are all down there. So if you flood that area out, we lose our economy entirely. And of course, the more affluent areas like Hedwig Village, San Felipe, off of Westheimer, all those homes, in fact, what do they call it, within the loop, they're making sure that the water goes down a lot faster there, and I'm noticing that too. And, of course, as a result of the reservoirs being released, quote-unquote, the control release, a lot of homes are suffering right now. So although we think we're out of the wood, when they release water that's coming from the Buffalo Bayou, it's actually going to bring the water up in certain areas. And, of course, they're discounted. They're the have-nots. They don't care about what's going on here. So what's going on in the media, I think, is there's a lot more filtering of the news compared to what you saw with Katrina, when we saw it firsthand. And even when Spike Lee, for example, did a documentary, he just pretty much pressed, hit the record button, let everything play. There's a lot more filtering, I noticed, of the news here compared to what was going on in Katrina. Because they don't want the image to be taunted, to be tarnished. They don't want Houston to be labeled another New Orleans.
Let's talk about
that. And I'm noticing that. I'm noticing that clearly.
Let's talk about that, because, Houston has been the center of the Super Bowl. It's been the center of NCAA finals, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm,
so
that's
very important, because they don't want that money loss. Let's be
correct.
Real. Galveston opened up Monday.
Mm-hmm.
How the hell can you even get to Galveston? Businesses were open and ready to receive consumers on Monday. They're talking about they're going to be damn near at full operational strength this weekend, because it's a holiday weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but again,
it's
how
a holiday
the hell can
weekend.
You get there?
Because
depending
it's all
on
about
where
money.
You're coming,
greed.
Yeah, depending on where you're coming, you could be flooded out. You have no one knows how you're going to get there.
Because 45 is a parking lot. 45
right.
is a lake. There's no way people are getting down to 40, taking I-45 down to Galveston right now. So what's going on, of course, is Port of Galveston is a cruise ship, another cruise ship destination, takes you to Jamaica, wherever, Mexico, wherever. And they want business to keep going, of course. So they're finding a way to make sure to keep the Port of Galveston open. But meanwhile, there's a lot of water the water levels are pretty much all the same. They've gone down maybe about 2 or 3 inches in the last couple of days. There's nothing that's going to, there's no livable condition going on right now. And like I said, even if you are on dry land, like where I am right now, gas, the food pricing, all the trucks. I mean, imagine driving down the street and every business on your left and your right completely closed, the Starbucks, the McDonald's. I mean, there's
Hold on.
It's almost like,
Mm-hmm. Whoa.
You said the Starbucks is closed?
Whoa.
Starbucks has not been
open. Did you say
McDonald's?
Wait a minute.
McDonald's has not been open. Starbucks, I'm telling you. You guys have a lot to be grateful for.
Now, we're talking about America now.
That's crazy talk.
It is really bad. I'm looking.
America.
I can take pictures.
With McDonald's.
That's why I say.
Mm-hmm.
You would think McDonald's is open. McDonald's is not because they can't get deliveries. They can't get the eggs. They can't get the volume of certain businesses are open, but certain ones are not. But Starbucks has been closed since the day of the storm. I just get my coffee at Starbucks. And I'm a caffeine junkie. So you can only imagine what I'm dealing with right now.
If you're wondering about the chaos, then that's it. You guys got to reopen that McDonald's.
There's no Starbucks.
If you start closing down the institution in American staples, it kills that false reality. And
once you wipe away the American
facade, and you realize you're 9 meals away from every other developing country, then hell yeah, you go crazy.
Yep.
Imagine going from being in a developing world to an undeveloped world in less than 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. And it's been a very humbling. So when I see things like what's happening right now in Sierra Leone or Nigeria, it brings me a lot more compassion. I have a lot more compassion for what's going on because it's really humbled me. I mean, just the act of having a loaf of bread, like I was sharing with Lee. I've not had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich in over a week. This storm hit Friday. I didn't get bread to Thursday. So it's been that bad out here. And like I said, we're not completely flooded out in most parts where I live, Northwest Houston, but it's rained enough inches. And, of course, right below Northwest or above us is this complete, devastation. And the trucks can't deliver. It's a really dire situation. It's really dire. But McDonald's, Starbucks, a few Mexican restaurants. I mean, you can't get food anywhere. Only businesses that have been open, I think, have been KFC, Popeyes that I've seen, and what else has been open? I was able to get my coffee from a Dunkin' Donuts way down the street.
America runs on Dunkin', dog.
At the top of the waves. I had to go to Dunkin', and that's the only coffee shop that I've enabled because I'm dealing, I have a bad caffeine habits,
That speaks a lot to your community, though. That speaks a lot to the ability for you to walk down the street and have that available to you. That speaks a lot. I'm just thinking about those people who, when that liquor store floods, they're ass out, store and the gas station flood. I mean, I'm just telling you, if you got more than a mile to go between you and your grocery store, and the closest thing is the gas station, and it's out of gas and it's flooded, it really does become real.
It really does.
I think is the way you've been able to keep your family safe and keep yourself together.
Mm-hmm.
I commend you. It's like being a modern
day hero. What are those shows
where you have to? It's like Naked. Is it Naked and Afraid? What are those shows where they drop you off in the jungle with a loincloth and a Bowie knife?
You're surviving. That's all you're doing out here. That's all you're doing. Because again, either you're in a flood zone, you're in a flooded out area, or you're in an area where trucks can't make deliveries. So that's all pretty much is going on.
The brother earlier had a very good argument, zoning laws. So we start talking about solutions.
Jason.
One of the solutions is you can't just keep building, you can't keep rebuilding where the water came, right? Who is the city manager? Who's talking solutions down there?
Yeah, well, we have a mayor. He's a great mayor, Sylvester Turner. But again, he can only do so much. Corporate interests are going to overstep him. I mean, he can do so much to actually put in place or write out the flood. The zoning laws, I'm not sure. I think they were created back in the 40s or whenever they were created. But whatever the case may be, he's of the belief, and most people here in Houston of the belief that they want to attract business here, affordable housing, because, again, we're the oil and gas energy corridor of the entire U.S. the medical center. I mean, every hospital, there's blocks and blocks of hospitals here. So we attract a lot of nurses, doctors, those that are in healthcare. So, of course, they're going to see greed before they do practicality. Now, in terms of was it a mistake? It probably was a mistake. Now, seeing that what we have here, because we have houses that have been washed off their foundation, I mean, furniture running everywhere. Obviously, it was a bad mistake. So what do you do to solve the problem? I mean, you can't just pluck those people out of a flood zone now that they're there and redesignate it as a flood area. I mean, I don't know what the solution is now, but in hindsight, it was probably a bad mistake to have this overbuilding going on here in Houston, you know, because, you know, the situation is really bad. And with these reservoirs and these control levees that are going on, or control releases that are going on, we're not out of the woods yet. There's still water that's sitting. There's still water that's coming from other areas that are, and not even to mention the threat of disease. Now, they're saying fecal strep is in the air or in the water. There's been traces of lead, cadmium, West Nile, possibly Zika. And there was an explosion at a chemical plant right outside of Houston called Crosby. And they're trying to keep people's fears down, but the chemical is organic peroxide. That's carcinogenic, cancer causing. People are not too far from that, and they're evacuating. It's almost like world, like Armageddon out here, and they're trying to keep people's fears down. Of course, a lot of first responders, their eyes were getting burnt, their chests, their lungs are suffering already just to try to put out the plant. And they just said, you know what, this is, let it try to burn out. And but meanwhile, the plant, the toxins are still in the air. So Lord knows what the long-term ramifications of those chemicals are. There's a lot going on down here, a lot going on.
Mm. We honestly are not getting. I did see that the plant had a breach. That there was something going down at that chemical plant. They did put that out, but they did not. Yeah. They did not put it within the proper scope of the entire disaster. And they almost act like there was a flood and then there was a breach, and they're not really attributing them to each other very well.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. And Crosby is I wouldn't say in a well-to-do area, but a lot of the have-nots are near the chemical plant. So here in Liza, again, the same situation, environmental racism, breathing in toxins, you know, because of course you're not going to see this chemical plant in a rich area. We know that already. So it's just a disaster. There's so much that needs to be there's a lot of recovery going on. But, I mean, there's a lot of news that's being filtered. I find it very disheartening, very disappointing, because they're trying to make this not to appear another Katrina. They want this to be the heroic, oh, we've saved all these lives. And, you know, I mean, the body count is a lot less, thank God, than what happened to Katrina. But where I believe the total right now is up to 50. But there's still a lot of the truth that needs to come out. You know.
All right, so let's go through. But let's go through some. Go ahead. Finish your point. Now I'm gonna go through some of the.
No, go ahead. Go right ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go right ahead.
All right. So you're right. So right now the body count is up to 50, which includes a family of six that were found in a van that was swept away by flood waters. One HPD officer who was on his way to work. It's estimated that $27 trillion. Again, I will say 27 trillion gallons of rain hit Houston and the Houston area over 6 days. Up to 72,000 people have been rescued. 10% of the buildings in Harris County have been flooded. The Trump administration is seeking $7.85 billion as a air quote down payment for disaster relief. Originally, they floated the $5.95 billion number, but a letter sent from Trump's budget chief to Speaker Ryan contained the new number on Friday. The bulk of which is going to FEMA. Now, remember, Trump was going to scrap FEMA, but the bulk of which is going to
imagine
FEMA.
That.
Of the 7.8, listen now, check this out. Of the 7.85 billion, the bulk is going to FEMA, with the remainder of $450 million. We started at $7.85 billion and wound up with a remainder of $450 million going to the SBA for loans to homes and businesses. A vote is due on the House floor later in the week. Now, $6.7 billion is going to be requested in additional to this to replenish FEMA's disaster relief fund. Trump's budget, again, remember, Trump originally was going to slash FEMA, was set to cut $876 million from FEMA's disaster relief fund. The cuts were intended to help cover the cost of his Homeland Security bill, which includes the border wall. Now, Mayor Turner, as you said, solid mayor. The mayor has asked for $75 to $100 million right now just for debris removal. I think that's a little too premature because, as you said, the levees are still being released and controlled releases.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's a little too premature.
You're right. It's a conservative mind. There's a lot more, and that's not even taken into consideration. The city of Beaumont just went through what we went through. We're, Beaumont's about an hour east of Houston.
I'm getting there.
African American.
I'm getting there. More than 440,000 people have registered for aid from FEMA. $79 million currently has been approved for direct aid for relief. Now, we have a Flint South situation, sort of, kind of. I told you I was getting there. Beaumont has had problems with running tap water. Its supply was lost on Thursday due to rising waters of the Natchez River. Currently, Natchez is at 7 feet above, again, 7 feet above its record and still rising. They are about to do a controlled release of that in order to alleviate some of that pressure and hopefully get some drinking water going on. Now, this is what really caught a lot of my attention as I'm doing this. Now, as far as flood insurance is concerned, I didn't know about this. You know, first off, I was not in Houston long enough to buy a home. It was actually my intention to buy a home in my second year or my third year, not my first year. And so I didn't know enough about Houston to buy a home. But the National Flood Insurance Program, which was created in 1968 after Hurricane Betsy. Now, that's an old school name and a half, ain't it? Betsy. is aimed to provide financial stability for homeowners in flooded plains. Homeowners in listed zones are required to buy insurance through private companies, but subsidies from the government are given to keep the rates down, and the government actually sets the rate. It can be between here and here. Now, policies are policyholders are required within a 1 in 100 chance in an area, that has a 1 in 100 chance of severe flooding in any given year. Now, the problem has been, and this is what we ran into after Katrina. The problem is outdated information is frequently used when making that decision as to whether a homeowner has to buy insurance or not. It had been 20 years since the area in New Orleans had been updated before Katrina hit, and the fact of flooding from rainfall during storms isn't included in the calculations to find out if you need insurance or not. This is something that scientists have said will happen more often as global warming. But they didn't say global warming, but as time passes, this is something that's more this will be more and more significant. The average annual premium in Houston for flood insurance, $555. That's the average. Now, this is some sad but funny shit. Lawmakers are debating. Let me step back for a second. No, I'll do that. So lawmakers are debating on ways to improve the program's long-term financial outlook because it's underwater. The National Flood Insurance Program lost a lot of money after the flooding of Katrina and Superstorm Sandy. It went into debt. Now, the program is nearly $25 billion in debt and will expire on the 30th of September if not extended by
Congress. These jokers are debating how to improve the program's financial success, requiring homeowners to buy flood insurance. I thought that was a given, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm,
and discouraging people from rebuilding in areas that will see more storms. Well, basically, if that takes effect, every goddamn body in New Orleans got to move. And to be honest with you, Houston too. You know what I'm saying?
Houston too. Yeah, that's right. Because, in fact, a lot of homeowners here, I think they said something around 80% of all homeowners here in Houston don't have flood insurance because they're being told by realtors that, oh, you're not really in a flood zone. It's not really a threat. But we're finding out that the entire city of Houston is a flood zone. I mean, after this experience, of course. You know, but we, unbeknownst to most people here, we just think, oh, we're not near the ocean. We're not near Galveston and Corpus Christi. And we don't have to worry about that. But after what's going on with these reservoirs and these control releases, the entire city is a flood zone. You know, it's a lot more wet, that was kept. Information that was filtered and suppressed is not coming out, obviously. We're seeing.
But look at Sugar Land.
You know.
I mean,
Sugar
Land should have never been built.
Well, of course,
Sugar Land
right
should
down
never
the line. Exactly. Very far south. Exactly. Very far south. Initially, Sugar Land was, of course, a sugar mill factory, you know, back in the old days of Houston, but development of all that. It's a, quote-unquote, you know, working-class, nice area of Houston, but things have really changed there, obviously. It should have never been built. You're right. It's sitting in the floodplain in the very far south near the ocean. Yeah, you're right.
Right there. Literally
right there in the heart of a floodplain.
Some of the most expensive homes in Houston are in Sugar Land.
And the Brazos River, which is another river they have here, it cuts right through, right south of, right north of Sugar Land, but it's right in the area. So homes like in Sugar Land, Richmond, at the floodplain in the southern part of the county, they're pretty much going to be washed off. It's just a matter of time. And people didn't, we didn't think we needed flood insurance. That's what the realtor told us, you know. That's what we keep hearing over and over and over. So it's a very dire situation. This is going to, again, information has always been filtered, it's being suppressed, and the consumer, we don't know half the time what is truth and what's false, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a sad situation. The road to recovery is going to be not months but years. We look at Katrina and we see what's going on there. So, I mean, I have no idea, but I don't mean to jump, but I do have to run around and get some errands done the best I can. I wanted to talk about this, but just say your prayers for us down here in Houston. Yeah, go ahead.
Last question for you before you go. So when should I expect a moving truck?
Very soon. Are they hiring in Baltimore, D.C., Philly? I'm on my way. I'm not concerned with the snow. I'm not concerned with the wintertime. I was a little worried about the snow and ice, but I can deal with that now. Hey, a winter coat will be my best friend.
What did he say? He didn't got his priorities reordered.
I've had enough of 80 degrees. Yeah, I don't care if it's 30 degrees in January. I'm gone because we, of course, don't have winter here in Houston. If Houston was winter, it's 85 degrees in January last year, so we don't have winter down here. I'm on my way. Just call somebody and let me know. I'll get my resume. I'm on my way.
All right, man. Hey, man.
But, yeah.
Thanks for your time.
Nice hearing from everyone. I appreciate everyone. Thank you, guys. Thank you, fam. Y'all have a good one. All right.
Thank you for that information.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Okay.
Valuable information. Yeah, very valuable. See, because when you have first person perspective, you can say what people aren't saying, you know.
Right.
If we didn't have him as a resource, we would have to use whatever they're broadcasting as our source, you know.
Absolutely. And you know, this is one of the things that I enjoy about the show is that we do have such a vast amount of people that we can tap on the shoulder and like, come on in and give us some firsthand information versus the secondary or tertiary type shit that, as he said, is being filtered through whatever color lens it needs to be.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, brother. There was one piece they didn't, that passed by the filter. My sister, My sister standing there with her two children and told him, man, get out of my face with this shit. My kids is hungry and we destitute. And you come asking me about some stuff that don't even mean that we about to eat in the next minute. She read that reporter up and down. And got and that piece of footage made its way right on to. And so this is what I'm saying. They filtering, but they not filtering good enough. They wasn't able to find that one, you know, toothless black man with the dirty baseball hat, you know, to tell them, I don't know what happened, but the government sure is good. They didn't find him. They found the real one that had been sitting there with her children. They found the weird one that had been sitting there hungry with her kids, and she was ready for that camera. But that's exactly what we need, because most of the time when you want anything powerful to happen, you have to capture the hearts and minds of the citizens in order for them to approve those new budget changes. If you don't tell us how bad stuff is or how good something is, we don't know to rally ourselves behind the cause. And by filtering that information, they not only paint this false facade about how heroic people are being, they also dampen the ability for us, you and I, to feel empathy with those people. And when it's voting time for, you know, this and that, or when it's time to take the money from the military and put it back into FEMA or something like that, we never got the proper story of what actually of the true devastation and struggle. So we say no to the plan. We say no to reconstruction and infrastructure plans when 30% of the infrastructure money is recovery from disaster. But we so busy seeing it, we think they finna put some more fountains in the park, or you know, or put some paste on an old bridge or something. They don't see that when you down an infrastructure plan, you kill the ability for people to rebuild after natural disaster. It's a domino effect. And by filtering the news, you don't give us a chance to make an informed decision when it's time to cut the check.
Sometimes that's part of the plan, though. You know what I'm saying? So that's why
I wonder what happened with that other program. Do you remember the program of we're opening up your home so that people in disaster situations can get bused or flown to your home for a short period of time until you know the water go down or the city open back up or school starts again,
whatever opens
the city back up. It happened during Katrina. A lot of people went to Arkansas and all the way up to Montana. Some people opened up their homes so that, well, back in the day they were calling them refugees, but so that victims of the hurricane could relocate into safe housing in the other houses in America. That was happening. And now I haven't heard of one family being relocated to another person's house, opening up their doors so that they can take on victims of the storm. What happened?
You know what? I haven't heard it on a national basis, now that you make mention of it, but I have heard it on a local basis. I was watching the news just the other day, and a young man was saying, a young lady had just been rescued, and one of her rescuers said, you can come stay with us. And she was saying, well, I don't even know you. And he's like, it doesn't matter. You know, but he was saying that his family had been through a very turbulent time either early this year or sometime last year, and how people opened up and helped him. So he was more than willing to share whatever they had to help people during this desperate time of need. And, you know, these are the wins that go unreported, mainly because they get overshadowed by donations from Kevin Hart and J.J. Watt and the Kardashians and all these jokers, you know, but or the shenanigans of a Joel Osteen ridiculous, just straight up ridiculous. But
that was disheartening. But to me, that's indicative of church behavior. I'm sorry, I hate to be critical, but there are many issues that the church have been turning their back on. And so extreme emergency can be added to the list, bro.
But let's not allow T.D. Jakes to get off the hook either, because he's just in Dallas. You didn't send a bus down, bro? Is this a couple-hour drive? You didn't send a bus down? Pick up some folks? Bring asses up to Dallas? I mean, if that's not out of the scope of thinking. It's only a couple hours away. Really, that's all it is. It's just a couple hours away. 3-4 hours max. Send a bus down, pick up some folks. Shuttle them down, shuttle them back. I mean, that's better.
We still have trailers. We still have unused trailers. We still have unused mobile trailers from the last storm that sit baking in the sun.
You don't want to put people in those, though, because remember, FEMA got them things from, as every contractor does, every government contract, the lowest possible bidder, and they were talking about they were causing people respiratory problems. Those trails were causing people a lot of respiratory problems. They had kinds of shit in them damn trails. Yep, that might not be the best way to go. Yeah.
Man, this country, boy, this country.
Yeah, it'll put it on you, boy.
This country,
put it on you.
And they wonder why we crazy. Boy, I tell you.
They will put it on you.
It ain't nowhere to turn. Come on, rocking a hard place. How about a hard place that's on fire and a mountain on the other side? Man. So,
but Mr. Day,
I've seen a lot, though. I have seen a lot of work. Oh, go ahead. Mr. Day?
Mr. Day didn't join us, unfortunately, but that's okay. We got a whole lot from Camilo, and that was more than enough to carry us through. So, I'm sorry. Transition, please. Go ahead. You said you've seen a lot of...
The bomb, we're just talking about guests, though. That other caller, the secondary caller, the one who talked about the zoning laws, these are the solutions, you know? We're talking solutions and what people can do, and you know, being aware of plans on the federal level that are going to fund your city, as far as infrastructure is one, but also knowing that you know, stop building on top of marshland and stop building.
Mm.
As far as my region of the country is concerned, stop building in Tornado Alley. You know where the tornado is coming. You know where the flood is going to happen. You know where these disasters are going to happen. Stop allowing people to invest in where they know they're going to get washed away or blown away or spun away. Stop. Go ahead.
We were just talking about that the other day. How in the hell do you build in Tornado Alley? Like, who does that? You just want to live in a spot called Tornado Alley? Who does some shit like that?
You know where that water wind is going to come. As far as California goes, you know where that fault line is. Stop building infrastructure on top of this crack in the earth. That's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. As far as every region has its local areas that are not supposed to be touched. Here in Kansas City, we have a riverfront. You can't build that close to the river because it banks. It will crest on you. The Missouri will crest on you, and you will wash away right on down, and they'll find you somewhere down south. We don't have housing down there. You know, when the water get high, only some diehard hillbillies with trailers down there. And they drive on out and let the trailer float on down the river. other than that, everybody knows if you want to survive in Kansas City, you got to go on top of the hill. There's a hill from the west to the east of the city on the west side coming from Kansas is a crest. You get on top of that hill and you safe. You go down there up under that hill, you get what you get. They don't let you live down there. Well, how hard is that? How hard is that to say we did a geological exploration and survey of the land and we found it to be unfit for human living?
when money is the motivating factor, not many people are going to step up and say something like that, though.
It should be a federal issue.
But you have a president in that every time he opens his mouth, he's talking about rolling back federal regulations in order for more jobs to be created. It doesn't work. If you get rid of one,
as far as whoever build up on there, whoever build up on this unfavorable land should be responsible therein for the lives lost. Because people know when they do, and you only have to tear a house down two or three times to say, oh, I done tore this. This thing has to been rebuilt with every storm. Let's stop redoing this.
But then, too, you have those whom are screaming. So the politicians. Everyone's now jockeying for, and when I say everyone, I mean the senators and the congressional folks, representatives, I should say, from the state of Texas. And Louisiana and potentially Oklahoma are jockeying for money for relief from Harvey. These are the same mofos that stood up and said, we are not giving money to Sandy relief. Same motherfucker. I don't believe we should have to do this. This is the local responsibility. But these are the same motherfuckers going before the House now, going before the Senate now, talking about, yeah, we need to get this money, dog. Which I don't know, how are we gonna work this out? We don't need no numbers on it. We need a blank check. How are we gonna work this out?
I was confused about this with Chris Christie. Do you remember when Chris Christie took the money from Obama, and there was some degree of shame associated with him for accepting relief money? I never understood the shame associated with the acceptance of relief money, but now I get it. I get it now. You should be ashamed to need money to refix things that you already knew when you built it there that it wasn't going to survive the storm.
It wasn't
going to
stand.
You should be ashamed.
It wasn't going
to
stand.
You should be ashamed to be keep asking me to put Band-Aids on cancer. You should be ashamed of that. And so now when I used to be like, why they tripping and ashamed? No, you should be. Because especially if you get the money two and three times and you still don't fix the issue, it's like being a disaster. If they're disaster addicts, that's what
but
they
you
are.
Know why?
They're addicted to disaster relief, but they don't fix it. They never go to rehab. They never fix the issue.
Why? There's no money.
I don't understand.
Made.
That's what I'm asking you. That's what I'm asking.
There's
you.
No money to be made.
Why is it so? It's saving lives.
There's money to be made in chaos. There's money to be made in chaos. If you fix it, then how can you slide that extra money in for that other thing that you want done over here? You can't do that. There's nothing. There's no way you can slide it in. There's no way to put it.
That's how you earmark. That's how they earmark and put that money on there. That's what it is.
That's it. That's it.
Well, I do want to say this. Beyonce, Kevin Hart, Kaepernick is busy with international stuff right now, but the people with the money, they seem to be ready to cut the check. They may not be ready to open up their actual doors, but they're ready to cut the check. Now, here's my problem. The last time checks were cut was for Haiti. And do you remember the... It was a million. They were $1 million homes.
Yeah. Mhm. Yep. The shanties that the Red Cross built, and this is why people aren't donating to the Red Cross. This is why I will never send a dime to them jokers. Somebody on the ground, and I will send money to them. I will never send money to the Red Cross, ever. Ever.
So would you say
not at all?
That if I wanted to start a business, being the type of place where you could send me money and I would hire subcontractors to go through and actually do the work. Would you think that a lucrative business to be, instead of going through the Red Cross and all those people, to be the kind of organization where you call them and you say, I have this money to donate, but I'd like it to go towards medical supplies. And I would make, and I call Johnson & Johnson and get the best bang for your buck on medical supplies, and then organize the distribution of those supplies at a grassroots level. Is there anyone doing that other than the Red Cross? Is there someone else doing that?
I'm not sure.
Well, I'll do my research and figure it out, because it's granted there is some ugly there. They're worse than that Christian. What's them people that would have the babies with the flies around their mama? Them. They worse than them. they worse than them. They'd be standing there and not a fly would land on them, but it would be flies on the baby. And I would try to figure out, like, how they make the flies only fly on the baby. But what I'm saying is, if you don't like the way people are appropriating your donation, be it $10 or $10 million, you should be able to have a list of alternatives of people to donate to, so that your mission, the work that you want your money to do, actually gets done.
Oh, well, you preach to the choir, baby. Trust me. You preach to the choir.
Hmm.
The road is being paved and the wheels are turning. Trust and believe. But look, other than the NFL starting in full swing.
Oh, yeah? The NFL starting?
Yeah, next
week. I didn't know that.
Next week.
I didn't know anything about that.
Yep, next week. NFL starts in full swing next week. And collegiate football has already started. This is the first all out and out Saturday of collegiate football. Alabama actually plays Florida State today. So that, I think that's an 8 o'clock game tonight. That's a primetime game. I will be all over that tonight, and while I do preparedness. So people have gotten on me, right? Just like, yo, are you Pat yet?
Okay.
Like, no, I'm not Pat. Why would I Pat? That makes no sense to me. Well, because, you know, I'm a dude. I need jeans, shirts, drawers, socks, maybe two pair of shoes, three mats. That's it. I'm a dude. I don't need all that. It's going to be hot on the West Coast. What the hell I need all that shit for? I'm going to throw some T-shirts in the bag. I'm going to throw some jeans.
Well, you might have at least one floss and one of them linen Cat Daddy outfits, in case you...
Well, I got to be, you know, at least clean once.
As long as you got... one nice Cat Daddy shirt, you're good.
But that gives me an excuse to go shopping. If I pre-plan it, then I can't go shopping. You see what I'm saying? That kills the whole vibe.
Men's clothes are not a bad score on the West Coast. Men's clothes are not bad, but they do not cater to the stout gentleman. I'll say that.
I got you. I'll tell you this, too. Like, and full disclosure, as we wrap up, because we're going to wrap. I'm a 36 waist. And I've moved up to a 38 because of my size. I have, some nice thighs on me. And now I've actually had to move up to a 40 because there's a newer cut on jeans that just doesn't give me that comfort level that I need. So I'm 4 inches above in the waist that I have to purchase just in order to keep my thighs in a comfortable state. Yeah, that's just borderline ridiculous. But it's what I have to do in order to just be
comfortable. It kind of sounded ridiculous. You know who you sounded like? Dolly Parton. She says she wear a 7. She wear a size 7 shoe, but an 8 feels so good, she buy a 9.5.
That's bananas. But look, the last couple of things I wanted to touch on really were Doc Idiot Boy puts forward this whole thing. Just out the blue. I'll make a determination on DACA next week. What the fuck? Did you seriously, dude? So now you have an entire holiday weekend where hundreds of thousands, if not in the millions, of people are sitting around nervous about their status, their legal status here in the United States of America. How inconsiderate, how juvenile, how leaderless is that type of mentality. It's horrible. However, so
DACA is the Obama administration put into place a plan that defers children of immigrants, whom are not legal citizens but have lived here their entire life to stay in the country. They were not born here, but they were children when they got here. 3 months old, week old, 2 years old, they were children. So for all intents and purposes, their entire life has been spent as Americans. Now, this idiot, as I said, because he's an idiot boy, has put this whole notion forward. Why? Because there are some conservative attorney generals whom are planning a federal lawsuit, and they could file it as soon as Tuesday. So he's going to try to supplant them by making a decision on it. First off, why can't we just leave well enough alone? That's first off. Secondly, why we even elect this boy? And when I say we, I mean as a nation as a whole, not us as individuals, but a nation as a whole. There's a focus group that happened in Pittsburgh the other day who focused mainly on the idiot box and the orange one, a Super Oma. I don't care what the hell you call him. Him. Outrageous. Disappointed. Not ready. These are some of the superlatives that were used to describe the orange of Donald Trump. I'm sorry. He's got to be his own worst enemy. One of the attendees said. Another attendee. I'm still going to hold off judgment. I'm hoping things can turn around. Why? Why? We're almost a year into this fiasco, and you're still holding on to hope? How long, sir, did you hold on to hope when President Obama got elected? That's my only damn question. The approval rating amongst Republicans for Donald Trump has dropped from 80%. His tweeting is for his own ego. His learning curve has been disappointing. Again, how much leniency, how much cover was President Obama given when he was elected? Folks, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. Especially if it's gone on this long. We are beyond the honeymoon period. We're beyond the grace period. This is who he is, and this is what we got. And we got ourselves into a whole heap of shit dealing with this joke. No other way to say it. No other way to describe it. We got ourselves into a whole heap of shit. So,
and you know, I want to say one thing. One of the more disturbing facts about our decision to elect this man is that in the eyes of other people, just like we get that filter for what's happening in Houston, there's an American filter as far as what happens on the global scale with this country. So other people have seen us elect this very narrow-minded, intellectual type guy. And so they are following in our footsteps. They're now electing people who have narrow minds. And so one of the latest countries to fall victim to that rationale is Kenya. They've just allowed their president, who is doing some of the best international work I've seen a developing nation be able to accomplish, and now they've gone on to a trickster. They've done the exact same thing. They were instead of the caveat is the guy they unseated had been there 15 years. You know, he was turning into a bit of a dictator, not in his behavior, but mostly in how long he had been in office. But he was still doing the will and the work of the people, where they decided that was too dangerous to have somebody in the seat for indefinitely. So they elected a guy who does not have the country's best interest in his mindset.
Mm-hmm.
So now that behavior of, listen, we can't keep doing the same old thing. We can't keep having this same old rhetoric shot to us. Let's try something new. This let's try something new mentality. It has ricocheted throughout the globe. And for some reason, people look at this country like a moral, you know, the last people who push in the last ideology of moral code. And so they're following us. They're following us down, down, down into the depths, you know. And I think that we really need to start paying attention, not because of just how we're affecting each other, but we're making global ricochets based on our decisions. And it's really sad.
Well, what's sad is there's still hope for change in a guy who is almost 80 years old. Like, dude, he is who he is. Let's stop parading the notion that there's potential for something other than what we already see. What we see is what we're going to get. Let's deal with the fact and let's behave accordingly. Let's behave in a manner that suggests not only to him, but others who may want to follow his path, that this shit is unacceptable. This is not who we are. We are much better than this. We are disjointed, yes, but we are trying to work toward unification, and your words matter, actions matter. We will not allow you to, or anyone else, to sit in the house of the people. And this is what really affected me about, what's the boy? The one that left last week, his name escapes me, but it'll come back to my mind shortly. Who left last week when he said that, I see now that staying in the people's house is not how I can best support you. I may have, you know, I could better serve you staying, being outside of the people's house. Dude, that is total contradictory to the principles of our nation. You are best being at the table of the people's house to do the work for the people and about the people than outside of it, where you're not held to that standard. Now, not everybody's meant to sit at the table. Sometimes you need that opposite in order to push forward in the agenda, and I understand that. I get that. That's not lost upon me. But from where he sits, from the corner that he operates from, his ideology, that's not for the betterment of our nation. That's for the betterment of a select few within our nation. And that's not what we as a people need. Now, we say all this and all that about Houston early, and I wanted to swing this way, but, you know, Camilo got in some really good information, and I didn't want to cut him off too often. But let's remember that Rex Tillerson, our attorney general, no, I'm sorry, not our attorney general, I apologize. That's Jeff Sessions. Woo. Tillerson, thank you. Our Secretary of State just came from the largest corporation in the world, ExxonMobil. ExxonMobil, gas, energy, corridor, Houston. See a correlation here? Do you think that he's going to allow his boys to lose out on this rebuilding effort? There's a lot of dogs in this fight that are sitting in either the White House or very near to it. Let's be real about the situation. Let's watch the money. I've said it a million one times on the show. I've said it a million one times off the show. Off air.
Follow the money.
Follow the money.
Yes.
Where are these contracts going to go? Who's going to get this money? You really want to talk about jobs? Let's allow that money that's going to FEMA to then trickulate down to the people in Houston who have garbage removal services, who have roll-off services, who are owner-operators who can move goods in and out of the city, who have their own construction companies, who are electricians, who are HVAC technicians, who are auto body repair, auto tech, auto mechanic shops. Let's trickle that money down to them. Let's stimulate Houston's economy from the inside. I'm not opposed to spending some from the outside because they need some shit in order to get there before they can actually start up and running, right? So that makes sense. Boom. But still, the majority of that money should go back to the people of Houston through startup money, restart money, whatever, in order for them to help themselves get out of this situation. And I guarantee
you. You know, Joplin.
You'll save a,
Joplin.
You'll save
Joplin
a hell.
Joplin was a good example. Joplin. Check it out. They were able to rebuild going green, and now their whole city budget as far as what it takes to run their buildings is a fraction of what it used to be because they rebuilt going green.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Well, family, that is what we got for you for this week. Sister Rosh, I thank you for joining us once again. My man Camilo, thank you, sir, and to all the folks whom are in the city of Houston, our thoughts and our hopes are with you, that you all weather this storm safely, first and foremost, and get back to being norm or as close to norm as you were before it came. Also, I want to thank the callers that called in, Brother Josh, Brother Tahakin from Florida. Appreciate you all joining us, and anyone and everyone else is listening this morning, well, this afternoon now. At least it is here on the East Coast. It's 41 minutes past the hour of noon. Thank you all. Next week, we will be in Vegas. Be in Vegas, baby. We got some work to do out that way. And
not we,
pretty sure that's
you.
Where we're going to be. Well, yeah, well. It's still we.
You'll
be there with me. You'll be there with me in spirit. Unless I choose to go back to Cali. You know, I'm actually thinking about going down to Phoenix. So you know what? I might do it from Phoenix next week. Because I need to see some folks down there. But this is the time that the business side has to take effect. You know, I usually do this once a year. Haven't done it for the past couple of years, so we need to go out and sit down with Rodney. Shout out to you, brother, for your birthday was yesterday. Shout out to my brother Eric, his birthday was yesterday. My Scrapple, my ace in the hole, Lisa Marie Carter, her birthday was yesterday. Somebody else's birthday was yesterday. Who the hell am I missing? Somebody else's birthday was yesterday. Whoever else's birthday, I'm sorry. Can't remember you off the top of my head. Whose birthday was yesterday? Shout out to you, too. And actually, next week will be my birthday. Next Saturday is actually my birthday. So I will be
nice
sober. For real. Right? I will be sober because it's been over 20 years since I've had. Well, no, this year will be 20 years. It'll be 20 years since I've had a drink. But I might be very well tired as hell, because I will be running back and forth between California and Las Vegas. The business of the show has to be conducted in Las Vegas, and then I need to get away and do some things just for me in California, because Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles is definitely calling my goddamn name. But until then, you all be good. You all be safe. We will holla. Peace!
Hey!